You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 28th of December. The Timberwolves get into the Jazz and surprise them in the home opener. We'll break down what happened to the Jazz. Defensively is the bigger issue than offense. Some very good news from the Jazz pick and roll game we'll look at, and what to expect from Oklahoma City. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA Insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Give you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan. We bring this to you Monday through Friday, every day, 30 minutes. Grab it. If you've got a commute going on, or find a way to fit it into your routine each and every day. So the Jazz are 1-1 in Oklahoma City today. Back at the scene of where it all took place, March 11th, and stopped the NBA world. The first time the Jazz will return to Oklahoma City since then. We'll be talking about it throughout the day. 30 for 30 did a really, really good podcast on it. It gave some great insight. I didn't realize that the governor of the state was actually in the building at the time, which was interesting to hear. It might have allowed things to happen a little faster than they would have happened otherwise. It's a wild night. We've never really talked all the way about it. I don't think I've ever shared all the experiences and thoughts from that evening. It was definitely one that you'll never forget. It was crazy. All right, to the more pressing needs, Minnesota came out the other night, just got into the Utah Jazz. And you could see it early. Like, our shot distribution early in the ballgame was way off where we want it to be. We only had taken like four threes early on. We weren't getting the shots. We weren't naturally getting to the shots we wanted to get to. And you got to give Minnesota credit. That's a pretty athletic team. Josh Okogie is athletic. Jared Culver's a top five pick. I mean, so they came in and got into the Jazz physically and caused the Jazz to kind of lose a little bit of the mojo of what they had in Portland and had throughout the preseason. And, you know, I think to some extent you have to give them credit. There's a bunch of different aspects to this, but if you look at the Jazz just in that first quarter, they only take 6 of 24 shots from 3. They take 24 shots in the quarter, but it's not the shot distribution that we've been looking for from this team. Suddenly we're back to taking 7 floaters, we're taking 4 long twos, we go a combined 4 of 11 on those shots. We do get to the rim 6 times, so we take 3, but instead of having, you know, a 13, now suddenly 13 of our shots are at the rim instead of, you know, or 13 shots are smart shots instead of what, you know, the 70 or 80% that we pulled off earlier. As the game goes on, what was interesting to me from the Jazz standpoint is the Jazz were able to kind of evolve a little bit. By the second quarter, even though they didn't make their shots, the shot distribution kind of begins to get a little bit better. They now suddenly take 9 of their 21 shots as threes, and you start to look at the shot zones of what they did in that game, and they are at a much better level where now instead of taking, you know, a million floaters, they're down to 4 shots that are not twos in that whole quarter, 8 of them at the rim, 9 threes. They don't make them, but you can see the, and this is kind of the positive to me that night, is you see the offense kind of get back on track. Not surprising entirely that early in the season you're going to have a game in which somebody kind of gets into you, disrupts your offense. You're not entirely sure where you want to be. In the third quarter, the Jazz go 1 of 10 from 3. So really, when we look at this game from an offensive standpoint, the Jazz lose this game because they just don't make shots. Their shot quality was actually about as good as it was against Portland. If you look at the second spectrum QSQ numbers, they go 0 for 4 on corner threes. They go 1 for 10 in that quarter for threes. They take 18 of their 25 shots as smart shots. So it's like the game goes on. The Jazz evolved offensively, really, really well. And actually, here's how. So that's the positive. And this is how they did it. So they opened the game, and Minnesota is just into the Jazz on the pick and roll and on the handoffs. They blow, to their credit, they just absolutely blow up our handoff game and our pick and roll game. The game really stagnates in the first quarter when all of a sudden the Joe Ingles, Derek Favors pick and roll game is just non-existent. And what Minnesota's doing at that point is they are deciding to guard the pick and roll with two guys, and they are not leaving the shooters at all. The Jazz have gotten 50 threes off the night before, and they look at it and they say, we're not going to let you get 50 threes tonight. So suddenly the Jazz are playing pick and roll in the middle of the floor, and Minnesota's crazy physical with it, and you end up with Minnesota not leaving any of the shooters, and so the handoff and the pick and roll game just goes for naught. The Jazz actually evolve as the night goes on. They start to kind of, they changed it to Ingles Favors pick and roll. That was a mess. And the pick and roll game for the whole night for the Jazz, if you actually look at their regular game, they average 0.88 points on the pick and roll, which is just not something that generally works for the Jazz. The Jazz then adapted, or usually the Jazz are like well over one, 0.88 is like their best. The Jazz adapted and moved the pick and roll down to the wings. They started running Conley and Clarkson off low pin downs into the middle of the floor. And if you think about it, Clarkson's coming with his right hand off a baseline pin down to the middle of the floor. Well, you've got the three shooters lifted to the other side of the floor. If they're all sticking the shooters, it gives them a ton of room to play around with. And so the Jazz start to have some success there. Minnesota adapts out of that, and the Jazz start to go get some open three-point looks, and this is where they stop making shots. That's where the game then swings in the next direction, because the Jazz are actually now coming off these picks, doing a little bit of what they do, kicking out to these shooters, and no one's making shots. Minnesota's doing some interesting things of who they're coming off with, who they're coming off of, and how they're doing it. But generally, like, you, now you're beginning, this is where the shot chart changes and the Jazz begin to get the shots. Then the Jazz do something interesting. They go to isolation. The Jazz end up running 16 isolation plays in that game. And a lot of them really were pretty darn successful with Jordan Clarkson and Joey. You know, they ran. Conley actually ends up running in the third quarter three different isolation opportunities. He runs another three in the fourth quarter. He just starts going after guys and beating them. Mike was great. The first half of the game, the Jazz ran four isolations the entire time. Two of them are Jordan Clarkson. One was a Joe Ingles just going after Malik Beasley, and Royce O'Neal tried to go after Malik Beasley on the final seconds of the quarter. Really, they ran three if you want to get into it. That changes dramatically. The Jazz now come out and run seven isolation plays in the third quarter, and they run another seven isolation plays in the fourth quarter. You know, it's Conley going after whomever. Conley's actually running six of them. Clarkson runs a few of them. That's a nice change for us. And they worked fairly well. We didn't used to have the ability to do that. That's actually a pretty good sign for the Utah Jazz. That evolution of an offense throughout the game, even though it's in a loss, is not something that we could do in the past. We didn't have multiple isolation guys that we could go try to make plays with and handle in that same fashion. And so for the Jazz to be able to do that, that's pretty encouraging. That we will likely see, you know, that throughout a year. Now, and as you, the first time you get hit like this, to the credit of Minnesota, the first time you get hit like this, I don't think you're entirely ready for it, right? So, the Jazz offensive rating in that first quarter was a 100, which is terrible. They make their first little evolution in that, and their second quarter offense is actually about the same. It's not much better. Now in the third quarter, when they suddenly start going to the isolation and moving the pick and rolls, they go to their offense goes to 113. In the fourth quarter, they amped it back up to about a 114. So you see that evolution in the game, which is good, because frankly, last year when we got hit, we didn't have counters. Now, there's some discouraging things to this as well, and where we are about the about defensively, and I'll dig into that here in just a second. Have you grabbed the new show Locked On Bets? Because they nailed the three-star lock again with Miami on Christmas Day, and Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports is with Q on the show, and they are nailing it. The show is brought to you by betonline.ag, and if you sign up today with a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code Locked On, you'll get a 50% welcome bonus. You got all the NFL games coming up, college bowl games, NBA underway, so don't sit on the sidelines. Get into the action, and the sponsor of Locked On Bets is betonline.ag. Locked On will receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sports experts. BetOnline. All right, the good friends over at Murdoch Chevy have done super work during the holidays. One, they were doing amazing work with the Utah Foster for Utah Foster kids with boots to keep their feet warm in the winter and get them the necessary clothing they need. They also are doing employee discounts till the end of the year for you. There's some good tax reasons why you might want to run over to the Chevrolet dealerships and go grab your Tahoe or your Suburban or your heavy car if you know about those rules. Plus, on the other end, the employee discount on the Equinox will get you $6,875 below MSRP. So that's a pretty great deal. You get about a $2,600 discount and a $4,200 cash allowance on the Equinox right now. The Silverado truck goes even deeper, gets to about $8,465,500 value below on the total value between the option package discounts, the cash allowance, and the employee. It's all at Murdoch Chevy, located in Woods Cross, also in Logan. Feel free to email me first, and I'll set up a meeting for you with whomever it is that you want to head out. They've got it all set up with the Murdoch Sure program for you as well if you want to do it from remote so you don't have to have contacts in the midst of COVID. That's all at Murdoch Chevy. The discouraging aspect of the loss to Minnesota is the question of whether or not we're going to be able to be an elite defensive team. The defensive rating in the first half is a 128. It's not good. First quarter is a 114. Second quarter, Minnesota scores 1.4 points per possession. Our defensive rating in the first half is a 128 against a not... We don't know, actually, on Minnesota. Truthfully, we just don't know. To say that they're not a very good offensive team, we don't know the answers to that. That, to me, is what's concerning. Here's the really big number that jumps out to me. We're a scheme defensive team. So, in other words, if we can stay in our scheme, stay in a pick and roll, rotate over, have Rudy involved, really is what it gets down to, we're terrific. And we were terrific against Minnesota. There, D'Angelo Russell, Karl Anthony Towns pick and roll got them, I think, 2 points the entire game on 17 tries. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Ricky Rubio, Karl Anthony Towns, got them nothing. Karl Anthony Towns, when guarded by Rudy Gobert, was like 1 for 8. Nothing. So we're a scheme defensive team, which often means we're dropping Rudy in the pick and roll. If we're switching out of pick and roll, it's Rudy. And as long as Rudy's involved, we're okay. In fact, players that are being guarded by Rudy so far this year are 14 of 35 shooting. 14 of 35. So they're not good, 40%. The problem is when teams, we got killed in transition, which was due to our turnovers, and in isolation. They ran 13 isolation plays against us. The way I looked at it, it's hard to tell. Like, so if someone goes ice, if like there's a play in which against CJ McCollum goes isolation against Royce O'Neal, he denies him, he kicks out to a shooter who misses the three. Is that a spot up or is that an isolation that leads to a shot? Like D'Angelo Russell drives the lane, kicks to an open shooter. He hits the three, but he beat him on an isolation. Like it's complicated when I'm rewatching the game, trying to define what I think is isolation and what I think is something else, but let's go with it. So 13 isolation plays, they get 8 buckets, 2 fouls, and 3 misses. The misses Are Karl Anthony Towns trying a step back three over Gobert one-on-one? Russell comes off a pick and roll. Gobert switches on him and he misses. And Russell drives the lane on Donovan Mitchell into the traffic and misses. Gobert comes over and alters the shot. So Rudy's involved in all of the misses. The buckets are what's the problem. And that's the concerning thing for me. And we'll see it tonight. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, George Hill, they've got good guards. They're going to have a big man lifted. You know, you go get Rudy out of the play defensively in some capacity. And we start, and they start just driving on our guys one-on-one. We don't have many good on-ball defenders. Teams are 15 of 33 when guarded by Royce so far this year. They're 7 of 10 when guarded by Clarkson so far this year. They're 8 of 20 when guarded by Boyan so far this year. Give Conley and Donovan credit and Joe credit. Conley's, they're 7 of 19 when guarded by Conley. They're 7 of 20 when guarded by Donovan. They're 4 of 14 when guarded by Joe Ingles. So it's a, you know, Faves is amazing, but I thought it was incredible. Like the minute Rudy was out of the game, Karl Anthony Towns went right at Faves because he's 3 inches taller. Like, that's just a big difference. Those 3 inches are a big difference. And so that's my biggest concern. We're systematically terrific defensively. And I think everyone in the league knows it, and you can't attack us because we're too good. So what teams are going to do is just go at us one-on-one. Just try to beat our guys. But defensively, that's where we had a bad game. We were pretty good in drives and help. We were pretty good on any type of post-up. We were pretty good on pickup, on picks. They didn't get, you know, our biggest defensive weakness last year was handoffs. We had a great defensive game against handoffs against Minnesota, but they had 21 points in transition. They got into isolation a ton. And that's, you know, that's what caused us problems. So, you know, that's the aspect. The good news back to our offense is that our offense is actually, like, other than some weird little things, is really clicking in, particularly the pick and roll game. Mike Conley and Rudy Gobert look just terrific together right now. Jordan Clarkson looks fabulous. Joe Ingles is his usual self. The one that's interesting right now is that neither Donovan or Mike looks at all comfortable with Derek Favors. So, you know, you think about, like, that Faves is, but the pick and roll with Faves so far this year has been really poor. We have not gotten that go. He and Joe have been okay, but the rest of the pick and roll game with Faves is not rolling right now. And it was really, you know, hey, we're 2 games into the season. But it's interesting that maybe there is some, you know, Mike Conley and he have never played together. We went through this with Mike last year that Mike has to try to learn who he's dealing with. Donovan and Derek have probably not done, you know, if you go back to the 2018-19 season, Donovan is not a great pick and roll player at that point. He makes the strides last year and, you know, Donovan is, it's Derek Favors runs, you know, a bunch of pick and rolls that year, but most of them are with Joe and Ricky Rubio and Donovan are the three. I'm not sure that my memory, I'll have to go look up my numbers, but I don't think Derek and Donovan were very good then either. In fact, I'm pretty certain they weren't because I know what Donovan's numbers were and I know what his Rudy numbers were that year. And so they, you know, Derek and Donovan don't have a very solid pick and roll combination. That's got to be connected. But otherwise, things look really good in that regard. The early season offense, getting the pick and roll, the cornerstone of our offense, those things look super good right now. And that's really, really encouraging. Let's see what else I think that's what I had on that. One other note around the league, I saw this with Jarrett Culver the other night, and then we'll talk about Oklahoma City. I mean, we don't really have this unless Mia Oney starts to get some time. I think you're going to see really, really good play from second-year guys. So they were rookies last year. The season shuts down in March. They're not going to get any better from March to the end of April, frankly. That's that time. Like, they're not. They're so overwhelmed. They're so tired. They're so beaten down. They don't have it. And then they get March until some of them until now, if they're a good rookie on a bad team, or they got another little 8 games in the bubble to kind of adjust. And now they're back in December. And so they're really actually, they got the longest stretch ever in the history of the game of like getting themselves ready for their second season. And they're now starting 2 months later. So I think guys like Jarrett Culver, DeAndre Hunter, RJ Barrett, players that are good, that were supposed to be good, that in their second year in the league, I think you're going to see a real uptick in second-year players. So keep an eye on that. Culver looked really good against us. He had another 8 points and 4 rebounds last night. I think the rookies are going to have a miserable time. I've talked about that a decent amount. But those second-year players, I think, are going to be pretty good. Like, I really like DeAndre Hunter. He had 15 points, 11 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks in Atlanta's win the other night over Memphis. I think he, you know, hell, Ja Morant was unbelievable last year. But there were a lot of rookies that struggled because most rookies do. So keep an eye on second-year players. Like Darius Garland suddenly had 21 points, 5 rebounds, 12 assists in Cleveland's win over Detroit. Like, that makes sense to me that these second-year players are going to be accelerated, making a bigger jump than they have. All right, let's preview Oklahoma City. They're the only undefeated team in the Western Conference, as one of my listeners tweeted out to me, because it's 2020, and that's the only thing that would make sense if that happened. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar. Protein bar or candy bar? It's hard to tell because the taste is that great. Built Bar, for a limited time, has white chocolate coconut deluxe right now, white chocolate cherry sundae, white chocolate cookies and cream, available in build your box only. You also can get a free face mask with every Built Boost purchase right now. But go to builtbar.com, use the promo code locked on, you get 20% off. The flavors are amazing. The non-nuts, you got coconut and mint brownie and double chocolate and salted caramel and orange and caramel brownie. It, with the ones with nuts, the guys say the coconut almond and the peanut butter brownie are by far the best one out there. But if you like the apple almond crisp and don't want it to be quite as sweet, you can like that. 100% chocolate on all of them. And the macros are amazing. When you compare Built Bar to the leading men's bar, you just get healthier product. You get 120 fewer calories. You get 3.5 less fat grams. You get 34 fewer carbs, you get 17 fewer sugar grams, and you get 7 more grams of protein. It's Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code Locked On, and get 20% off. So Oklahoma City is the only undefeated team in the West. This is a frightening kind of team to play early in the year because they're not beaten down by losing. They're going to lose a lot. They haven't had injuries where they have no depth and it's really going to be a problem for them. And so what you've got is a bunch of long, athletic guys that really play hard and then a super young second team that's kind of coming at you with all their juice. So their guards are good. George Hill and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So that's the first part of this. Gilgeous-Alexander is a rising star. They have clearly turned the team over to him. This is his club with a new head coach. This is, you know, this is what they're viewing as their future, and he is their main guy. He's probably the only one that's out there that's going to be back out there. George Hill, we know him well. He had a great opening night, 21 points, 8 of 9 shooting from 4 of 4 from 3 in just 24 minutes. And then they've got these, they're going to get into us physically in a similar manner. They've got Dort, who spent as much time as anyone guarding number one options last year. We got Baisley, who's a second-year player, fits my mold of second-year players. 15 points, 10 rebounds, an assist, two blocks, and a steal in his opener. He's long, he's lanky. He got kind of a start or two during the year last year, but wasn't somebody who played a great deal, and they're finally, you know, giving him an opportunity to with as much as they're rebuilding the roster. And then Al Horford, the veteran, is kind of conducting their offense almost the way that Jokic does. So you're dealing with another big that's going to pull you out and force you into isolation. In their opener against Charlotte, they were interesting because they just did a lot of different things. They had a high kind of a high level of drives. They ran 29 different isolations, which is a huge amount, and they were really good at it. So that should be a little disconcerting to us, because I talked about, you know, the weaknesses that we have, and these guys went ISO a ton in that game, and had great success. Charlotte couldn't guard them at all. Their pick and roll game is predominantly Gilgeous Alexander and Al Horford, or Gilgeous Alexander and Mike Muscala. There's almost nobody else. So, you know, that's their only guy that they're running in those circumstances. And their bench units are kind of intermixing their young guys. Theo Maledon, Diallo is an incredible athlete, but still developing. Pokuševski, who's this kind of wild pick they made, 7-footer, weighs about 100 pounds. You'll be stunned when you see him. And they just kind of intermix their centers in that group. That group could not score at all in their opener against Charlotte. Could not score at all. That's where we have got to crush their bench tonight on the road in those matchups. If we don't crush their bench, it's going to be a long night for us. Their starting lineup's good and athletic and can get into you. And if we are not careful and turn the ball over, we could have a really hard time with that. But this is a game we've got to win. You can't lose to Minnesota and Oklahoma City to start the year, frankly. That would be a little disconcerting. They might make some changes. We'll see. They've got some bench guys that are kind of more athletic. Pokuševski looked kind of outmatched. He was 0 for 6 the other night. Muscala's another stretch five. So both their fives, Horford and Muscala, are going to bring Rudy and Derek off the floor, stretch them out a little bit, and see what they can do. And they're going to give Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, Jordan Clarkson a hard time with Dort and Baisley and Diallo and these physical, defensive-minded guys coming at them. They are playing young guys who shouldn't have a clue because of, you know, we've talked about how the rookies this year have very little. It'll be interesting to see whether the Jazz do anything differently with Mia One and Shaq Harrison tonight, because this team is so Gilgeous Alexander dependent of whether or not they try to bring any of them in at all to deal with them. Because Gilgeous Alexander is a hard matchup for Donovan and Mike, who are both smaller, and Jordan's not having a lot of success in the second unit defensively. So it's worth keeping an eye on that and seeing whether the Jazz use their ninth guy as an interchangeable piece. I kind of get the vibe that depending on the matchup, the Jazz are going to use Niang, Harrison, or Oney in different manners depending on the matchup. All right, that is Locked On Jazz. We'll have a live postcast after the show with interaction with you, about a quick 10-minute postcast after every game with your interaction. Empty the Noggin is back. It's at utahjazz.com/lockedonjazz. That's utahjazz.com/lockedonjazz. And if you have not heard the Rejecting the Screen with Jeff Zilgit, the longtime NBA writer, about his cancer battle and all that, it's pretty moving and pretty impressive, pretty inspirational. So go take a second and listen to Rejecting the Screen. Have a great day. Thanks for tuning in. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.